And welcome to the midday. I'm Norman Gilliland, and Elizabeth Caballero is here. Welcome.
Hi.
Did I get that right? Still with the
yes, you did.
Spanish pronunciation.
Very, very good. I can tell you did live in Miami for a while.
Well, in Florida, anyway. But you are going to be a Violetta in La Traviata, the Madison Opera production. Actually, two of them coming up Friday, April 29th at 8 p.m. and Sunday. Is it Saturday?
Sunday.
Oh, Sunday. We'll get that right. Okay, between us. Yes, Sunday. I was trying to read my handwriting. May 1st at 2:30 at the Overture Center.
Which is an amazing place to sing in, by the way.
Yeah, great place to see an opera in, too. Mm-hmm. Violetta, she's a person of some questionable reputation, isn't she?
Yes, she is. But she is, I'd like to call her the courtesan with the heart of gold. It's a beautiful character, a beautiful acting role, more so than, I think, singing. It's an amazing role to sing, but it's an amazing role to act as well, which is why it was a great novel and an amazing play, and
Alexandre Dumas' Fils,
yes.
And it really does have some subtleties of character and personality that you don't get in a lot of operas. I mean, the psychology, mm-hmm. The kind of intricacies of it in this opera by Verdi really does require a lot of acting, doesn't it?
Well, I think it was a piece that really touched Verdi personally because of his relationship with Giuseppina Strepponi, who was a woman that he lived with for 10 years before he ever married her. And he just didn't appreciate all the stigmatism and the way that people looked down at them for that. So I guess it really touched him that this poor young woman who was the talk of Paris, all of a sudden, just because she became ill and wasn't, her goods weren't good anymore, I guess, you know, she was left to die alone. So
a job like that often comes with very poor benefits.
Exactly. Yeah, but
it's an interesting story having to do with the morals of the time and persons who run afoul of them and misunderstandings too.
Absolutely.
Of course.
What I like best about her, though, is how she sings it in the first aria. You know, how she just lives her life to the fullest. She just goes. She doesn't know when the end is going to come. She knows it's coming, obviously. So she's just going to live every moment like it's her last, and that's very exciting and very youthful and a lot of fun to play. You know, we forget to do that.
one of the world's great drinking songs at the beginning of that opera.
Absolutely. It's one of the greatest tunes ever. You hear it in a lot of movies and commercials.
A good waltz rhythm there. We're going to hear you performing somewhat different composer, although one that Verdi would certainly have approved of, but in Mozart, we have three wonderful pieces here that you recorded at First Presbyterian Church in Miami last year with mm-hmm. pianist Elaine Rinaldi. Now, this is from Mozart's Esultate Jubilate. It's an Alleluia. As long as you have voiced some opinions, Elizabeth, how would you do it differently today? That was only last year, after all.
Well, that was definitely a high C at the end, couldn't you tell?
That sounded nice to me.
Well, thank you. It's always hard listening to yourself.
As I told you just now, I don't know how many times I've heard that from performers that we've had in here who do perfectly beautiful work, but they're always somehow self-conscious or dissatisfied with hearing their own stuff.
Well, you're your own worst critic. You know, we don't need the critics in the papers or the blogs or anything, because you are your own worst critic. You really are.
Do you listen to recordings of yourself and then go back and use that as a means of improvement?
I don't. I should, because it is a good way of learning and improving. I really should do that more often, because when I do listen to them, I'm like, oh, I should have done this, or that would have been better if I would have maybe done more of that. Or So it is. It could be used as a great tool, but it's hard. It's very hard.
Well, speaking of hard, you had a very hard childhood in a way, as you were born in Havana, and you came over to this country on the Muriel boat lift.
Yes.
And how much of that experience do you remember?
I remember quite a lot. I was six when I had just turned six when I came to this country. So I do. I always say that I thank God that I was a child when it happened, because as a child, you really don't think of the risks involved and all the danger that could have happened. You're just going along for the ride with your parents. I was told that I was going to go visit my aunt in Miami, and I thought I was going to come back home to my little home in Cuba. I didn't know I was that, you know, the United States was going to be my home after that. So I made the best out of it. I remember making a friend in the concentration camp before we were let out to the port and everything else. So, and yeah, I remember throwing up a lot, getting very sick on the boat because our boat ran out of gas, you know, when we finally were in U.S. territory.
So you were just kind of bobbing around.
Bobbing around. And my mother, my sister and I, along with this other young mother and her son, were in the cabin below the boat. It was a 24-foot boat, and there were about 19 people on that boat. So it almost sunk when it was just laying there, and the Coast Guard came and rescued us eventually, and they removed the women and children. I remember being carried over, and they left the men on the boat, and they tugged the boat along with them. And I remember standing there with my mother and my younger sister watching my dad with all those other people there, that I was like, what's going on? This is so surreal. But, you know, you're still a kid, and, you know, you are just there with your parents, and you depend on them and you trust them, and that's why they're my heroes, because they did all that for my sister and me.
So did it take you very long to assimilate into the American culture in Miami?
Well,
feel established?
We lived in Miami for about a year, not even, a few months, until my dad finally found work up in Central Florida, and that's where we moved for like a year. And that's really where I learned English. And as a kid, you know, you're a sponge. You pick everything up so easily. And I was forced to speak English there, whereas if I were in Miami, I think it would have been a little bit more difficult. I've had friends who have arrived from Cuba as young adults, or, you know, and they have to move out of Miami to learn to speak English, unfortunately. And whenever I have colleagues that come and work with the opera down in Miami, and they know that I'm from Miami, they're all, nobody speaks in English here. And I'm like, I know, I'm sorry. You know, it's not part of the United States almost.
Do you still follow events in Cuba? I mean, even cultural events in Cuba? What would you have a sense of what's going on there?
I really don't. Politics is not one of my favorite subjects. And I find it very sad that because of the situation in Cuba, I can't even really go and visit and really know where I came from. You know, like I said, I was so young. I remember just my childhood memories, you know, my home and playing and this and that, but I don't know where I really came from. So I feel very lost sometimes, you know, because I am a nationalized American now, and I consider myself very American, but I never really will be American. I'm still Cuban, and so I feel very lost sometimes, and I'd like to know where it is that I really came from. And I guess with the political situation there now, if I were to do that, I don't think it would be looked upon as very wise, and I wouldn't want to insult many people in my community to do that either.
Well, you know, Verdi ran afoul of politics too. I mean, in his operas, and he was considered a very political person, and even with La Traviata, not so much political as, let's say, a cultural obstacle that he ran into. He had to actually change the time frame for the opera from he wanted to make it a contemporary setting, which would have been mid-19th century.
Exactly.
But that Violetta was so scandalous, you know, living without benefit of marriage in the opera, that he had to move it back to 1700 or so.
Yeah, I believe he was told by his publishers he had to do that, yes. Yeah, he always liked to push the buttons, which is, I think, what makes him so great and why we still enjoy his music so much nowadays.
Well, speaking of enjoyment nowadays, another composer who was one of the greats, was Rossini, and still very much a force in operatic circles, no question about that.
There's a great quote that I read not too long ago that Beethoven said that if Rossini was spanked more by his teacher, he would have been a better composer. I don't know if I agree with that so much.
There are a lot of funny stories about Rossini. He apparently bought a piece of property in Paris because it was shaped like a piano. and that, from what else I've read of Rossini, I can believe very easily. He had a tremendous sense of humor. I don't know if you've heard those piano pieces of his that he wrote after he retired from opera, The Sins of My Old Age, but there are some things that are actually questionable in terms of whether we can even play them on the radio because of what he was really describing with the piano.
I'm sure. Well, some of his most beautiful work are from his serious operas that we don't really hear so much. We just know of Barber of Seville and his more comic, you know, tunes and stuff, Cenerentola and all, but his, like, William Tell, there's some beautiful music in there that we never really hear.
Well, the overture kind of overshadows it.
Well, alone the overture, you know, but beyond that, I mean, the aria.
And that was his last opera, too.
Exactly.
So it's, in a way, it's the culmination of his work. This is from his Serate Musicali.
Mm-hmm.
And La Promessa is the name of this one, and it brings back our guest today, Elizabeth Caballero, with pianist Elaine Rinaldi. Audience had any idea what the words were about when they applauded so lustily there?
Oh, I'm sure, because I gave them, you know, all the imaginary, figurative, with me being Cuban, using my hands as often as I do, I'm sure I pointed to the proper places.
Well, that Rossini was definitely a character.
Yes, he was.
As well as being one of the great composers.
Mm-hmm.
So your Met experience, you have performed at the Met now, and what did that do for you as an artist?
Oh, it was an amazing experience, because not only because you get to sing in one of the most amazing theaters in the world, but also all the wonderful performers that you had with you. I got to sing in the Carmen with Elina Garancha and Roberto Alagna that aired on the HD broadcast, and there's a DVD out now with Deutsche Grammophon. And they were just beautiful, beautiful, wonderful colleagues to sing with. Marius Kvetchin was the Escamillo, although he's not in the DVD because he called sick that day, unfortunately. So it's Teddy... I'm blanking out on his last name. Forgive me, Teddy, but you were wonderful. Barbara Fritoli was the Micaela, who was just beautiful, beautiful singer. I enjoyed her work a lot.
Was there a moment for you when you were on that Met stage that you thought, oh my gosh, I'm on the Met stage? Or did you always just have to be very focused and businesslike?
I think when that hit me that, oh my God, I'm singing at the Met stage was the last performance. Because I guess the entire time I was just, you know, trucking along, you know, just, you know, I got to do my work. I got to do my job. And I'm having so much fun too. You know, I'm one of the gypsy girls. I was Frasquita. So I'm there singing and dancing and having a great old time. And then I think the last performance when I took my last bow and I looked out there, I was like, good golly, I sang at the Met, you know?
That's maybe the best time to realize it. You wouldn't be as self-conscious that
way. Yeah, I'm not really a nervous person anymore. I get more anxious, like, let's get this over with, you know?
Yeah,
like,
energy.
Let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
The adrenaline is kicking and everything, so I don't get nervous anymore, thank God. I only get nervous when, if there's illness involved, if I'm not feeling, you know, physically well, or if I'm a little bit worried about the text or, you know, with a piece or something, but I don't get nervous anymore about going out there and showing what I got.
You have to audition for the dancing parts? How does that work?
No, I didn't. And I'm sure that if I would have auditioned, I wouldn't have gotten the part. Because being Cuban, people think I'm a good dancer. Mm-hmm. But my dad always tells me that I have the music in my blood, but my circulation is not good.
All right. Speaking of things Cuban, we're going to go just past 12:30 for the quiz question today, because you have... Well, actually, several pieces on this CD by Cuban composers, or in one case, the Cuban-American, which would be Jorge Martin. Does he go by Martin or Martin?
Martin. Jorge Martin.
But also Ernesto Lecuona, who was one of the great composers, Cuban composers.
We call him the Cuban Gershwin.
Well, yeah, I think that, because he was contemporary of Gershwin's. And this is a little piece called Give Me Your Roses. This is my guest today, Elizabeth Caballero. That was Lecuona. It wasn't the one that we were shooting for, but we're going to hear that one shortly after I've asked the quiz question here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Now back to Lecuona. You have a, you feel a particular bond, Elizabeth, for Cuban composers? Are there a lot of them that we don't get to hear? Are there a lot more than we would think?
Well, I do, definitely. And definitely I would say that I feel a really nice bond with Lecuona, because I was born in the same city that he was born in Havana. He was born in Havana, but in Guanabacoa, which is a suburb of the big city. And that's exactly the place where I was born as well. So I feel a nice closeness to him, and his music is just so beautiful and touching, and really paints beautiful pictures, you know.
His piano music is very lilting.
Definitely. And, La Malagueña, and La Comparsa.
Yeah, exactly.
All those great
the two
pieces.
Most famous ones, yes.
I always love seeing them being performed.
The name of this song is Give Me Your Roses.
Yes, the one we heard earlier was Canción de Amor Triste, from one of his song cycles.
Song of Sad Love.
Yes, Song of Sad Love, with a poetry by Juana de Ibarboru, which is an Uruguayan poet that he set all these beautiful songs to her.
And the Spanish for this one is, I would rather hear it from you than from me.
Dame de tus rosas, give me your flowers.
It's his text.
It's his word.
Ernesto Lecuona.
I love that piece. I love all the passing tones that he writes in there and everything. It's very sexy.
Do you do a lot of recitals?
Not as much as I would like. I love doing recital. I really, really would love to do a lot more.
Is it a kind of a vanishing phenomenon, do you think, for vocal recitals?
Well, I think it was for a while, but then you have such great artists like Marilyn Horn and Stephen Blyer that they really like to continue to introduce and put recital out there, that it's not just a thing that, you do as a young voice student to get your degrees, or your junior recital, your senior recital. It's a lot more than that. I mean, it used to be done a lot And then it kind of like stopped because it was all opera. And then thank God for, you know, Marilyn Horne and Stephen Blyer for bringing it back. It's just so beautiful. I think it's such a great moment to just really get to know the performer in such an intimate setting. And it really just bring them to you and just enjoy all these beautiful songs that all these great composers wrote.
Well, you get some nice variety of composers and effects that way, too.
Absolutely.
What are the really hard composers to sing? I mean, the composers that either knew what they were doing and made it difficult or were not that idiomatic at writing for the voice. Are there some that are more challenging that way than others?
Challenging as much as I love singing Mozart. Mozart is a challenge because he wrote really well for the voice, and when I'm having some technical difficulties vocally, if I'm having trouble singing Mozart, at least for me, that will tell me, okay, I got to take this to my teacher. There's something going on in there. So, he's one of the ones that will definitely make you think about your technique and all. Puccini, all the Verismo composers, just because. It's realism. It's verismo. You tend to think more about the drama and the text and all, and that could get you into trouble sometimes, you know? So you have to be very careful how you approach those kind of operas and songs and whatever.
What operatic role would you like most to do?
My dream,
you feel ready to do?
I don't know if I feel ready to do it, but my dream role would be Tosca.
Oh, well, okay. Talking about dramatic.
Exactly.
And throwing yourself off the parapet at the end.
Definitely. And killing a man.
Well, we'll look forward to that, especially in HD.
Oh, I would love that.
My guest today is Elizabeth Caballero. She's singing the part of Violetta in La Traviata with the Madison Opera tomorrow night, right? That'd be Friday,
yes.
8 o'clock.
Yes.
And Sunday, May 1st at 2:30 at Overture. And tickets, I think, are still available for either of those performances.
I hope not too many.
I hope not too many. Promises to
it's
be.
It's a great cast. Donny Ray Albert as Germont, and Giuseppe Verano, who's in the wonderful young Italian tenor, is making his U.S. debut here as Alfredo.
Well, we've talked already a little bit, Elizabeth, about the scandal involving the characters, which, of course, drives the plot of any good opera. And you mentioned there's actually a connection between Liszt and sort of a similar kind of scandal.
Well, in my research on Traviata, I found out that Marie de Plessis, who is the character in which Alexandre Dumas based his novel on, and, Verdi based Violetta on, apparently Liszt had a very, very, very exciting affair with her. So
these things are all...
It's all connected. Everyone is connected.
Yeah. So many degrees of separation in that world. Well, this is the first of the... they're called... Petrarchan sonnets by Liszt, which are probably most known as piano pieces, but this one is a song, and there are several of these. What's the situation Liszt is addressing in the first of them?
Well, the first one is called Pace non trovo, and Petrarca wrote everything in doing my research on all these pieces. He wrote always talking about this love that this euphoric love that he felt and that he had. And people thought that it was for this woman named Laura, you know, because he always talks about Laura.
Yes.
And in my research, I found out that he actually was referring that to the laurel on that was put on, is that how you say it in English? On Jesus's...
Oh, a laurel?
A laurel, thank you. Mm-hmm. I was translating into Spanish. Uh-huh. That was put on Jesus. So I guess he was quite a very...
like the crown of thorns.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He was a very religious man, but it was not a woman at all. It was, you know... for the love of Jesus, although
with
some
Liszt,
of it,
you never know.
You never know. Well, this is Petrarca, the piece, the poetry. But with Liszt, yeah, I guess that's when he was thinking of converting and becoming a priest, and maybe he let Marie.
There was some influence going on there for sure. Mm-hmm. Fascinating man, Franz Liszt. So this is the first of those Petrarchan sonnet-inspired songs of Liszt with Elizabeth Caballero and Elaine Rinaldi last year in Miami.
Oh.
not exactly the unknown Franz Liszt, but the little-known Franz Liszt.
Oh, but it doesn't get any better than that, I have to say. Such a beautiful piece of music that he wrote, and he said it perfectly, I think, to the text by Petrarca.
So what are you most looking forward to in performing Violetta? I mean, do you come to it a little bit differently each time? I think, oh, tonight I'm really looking forward to this aria, or, you know, I'd like to kind of be even better at this part.
Oh, my favorite section in the opera is definitely the duet with Papa Germain.
Really?
Yes. To me, that is the heart of the piece.
Not the love duets with Alfredo, but the kind
they're beautiful. It's, you know, it's he just tops himself every moment. You know, he's got the great drinking song, then this amazing aria that he wrote for her, and with a fantastic cabaletta, you know, and when the curtain goes down, you think, oh my God, I have two more acts to sing.
Well, right.
So, because it's a tough first act. And then act two, you have that, oh, the most amazing, beautiful duet between the baritone and the soprano, one of the most amazing in my opinion, and just Dita la Giovine. Every time I sing that, just tears well up in my eyes, and I don't know how I get through it, but I do, thank God. And it's just amazing, beautiful music. And then the Amami Alfredo, I mean, the explosion of love in that alone is orgasmic.
But Germont is
Rossini creeped up in there, sorry.
Germont is the father figure, though. I mean, he's not the love interest. He's actually sort of the responsible adult in this whole situation. But those are still your favorite arias with him.
It really is, just because I think it just shows Violetta in such a different way, where she, you know, she's this party girl at the beginning, having fun, being very frivolous and stuff. But then we get to see how she's able to, you know, take a step back and say, okay, fine, I'll give up the only man who probably will ever loved me and will ever love me, and I will probably die after this, but I will do it because it's the right thing to do.
Wow. That is an ideal situation for generating great arias.
Oh, definitely.
My guest today has been Elizabeth Caballero. She's singing the part of Violetta, the lead in La Traviata, which means sort of the lost woman.
The lost one, yeah.
One of the great operas by Verdi is the Madison Opera. Tomorrow night at 8 and Sunday afternoon at 2:30. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Sharing your
music. I've had a great
music.
Time, too.